Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me, because more than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft too. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, LOCAPS. That's right, playing a real money draft for free by just using the promo code LOCAPS, but it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Cavs listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100, a $100 money-back guarantee. No one else is going to beat that. All you have to do is search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with the promo code LOCAVS.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today is Mike Zavagano from FearTheSword.com. Mike, how are you?
Doing great, man. How are you?
Doing good. Kind of glad that we have a lackluster kind of empty basketball schedule on this Tuesday as we record. That's kind of a nice change. I don't need to watch Bulls-Lakers. That's kind of a nice reason for me to give myself a night off before the Cavs play the Nets. Mike, so before we get into what we're going to talk about today, which we'll cover Kyle Korver, we're going to cover Channing Frye, we are going to cover a bunch of other things, Jake Crowder. The Cavs' five-game winning streak, what has stood out to you over that five game stretch that where they've had a really dominant win against the Pistons and then kind of stuff that's all over the place in their wins against the Knicks and in other games?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that I'm starting to see is that guys just across the board really appear to be settling into their roles on this Cavs team. And obviously, with so many moving parts and so many new players over the start of the season, I think that it was kind of reasonable to expect them to start out a little out of sync. But, you know, especially with Derrick Rose out right now, you have a rotation of guys that's pretty set into what's going to happen. I mean, D-Wade coming off the bench, he's obviously bought into that role. He's leading a bench unit that is positive when LeBron sits, which is extremely encouraging for a team that was a net rating of minus 8.5 last year with LeBron off the floor. And then you see guys like Jay Crowder, who's starting to look a lot better, at least on the defensive end. He's still not shooting the ball great, but I think his motion in the past few games has been good. And then you see a guy like Channing Frye, who was out of the rotation at the beginning of the season, and he's moved back into the rotation kind of in that 15-minute game slot, I would say. And I think that that's really juiced some of those second-unit offense.
Crowder, we're going to talk about Crowder in depth later on, but I think he, even if you're right, his numbers from shooting haven't been great yet, but I think you've seen a guy who does just look more comfortable. He's more willing to shoot. He's more willing to just take the shot, and he's also driven, and he's also put in the effort on defense. What we're going to start with, though, is Kyle Korver. Mike has a really long piece up that was best in SB Nation NBA, as a lot of his stuff ends up being, and it's looking at Kyle Korver's three-point shooting with and without LeBron James off the floor. I can't speak to what it is now after the Pistons game, where Korver, I think, had two threes, but before with LeBron on the in a fairly smaller sample size so far, but it's what we have. And at prior to Monday's game, Korver was 35 of 61 on the floor. That's a 57.4% with LeBron James on the floor. When LeBron sat, that dropped to 18.2%, 6 of 33. That's a very interesting drop, because you would think Korver is someone that is going to shoot well no matter what he's in. 18.2% is significantly lower than what you'd expect him to shoot. Mike, but what did you find in your research that tells you why Korver has been so effective with LeBron and why he hasn't been when he's played without LeBron, and particularly with Wade and with guys like Kevin Love?
Yeah, just an update there. He was 2-2 with LeBron on and 0-1 with LeBron off against the Pistons. So my article wasn't completely refuted in the first day, which is positive. But
it's always a win. Always a win.
Honestly, always a win. I was looking at it from a couple different perspectives. First, being who was passing him the ball. And I think that there is some value given to the fact that LeBron and Crowder have developed a connection where the last two regular seasons when Kyle Korver has been on the Cavs, he's shooting 51.6% from three off of passes from LeBron specifically. And that's, I looked through the shot dashboard over the years of data that we have back to 2013. That's the best that he's ever shot on passes from a single teammate. And so I do think that it's hard to see on the film, because a lot of the time it looks like Wade is giving Korver similar passes to LeBron. But I do think that you have to put some stock into the fact that whatever LeBron is doing, whether it's passing with the seams in a certain way or delivering the ball at a certain time or something like that, that LeBron is doing something that's making Kyle Korver extremely comfortable.
I think that meant just in terms of idea, just in terms of guest fit, I think that makes sense. Just because if you think about what Korver is going to be best doing, he's going to be coming around screens, he's going to be coming around situations where he can get shots off and he can get just kind of look, kind of feel comfortable. And if you're looking at who's the best player on the team to do that, it's LeBron James. And I think that LeBron is by far the best guy to set up Korver. The other side of this, and it's something you've already kind of mentioned, is the Cavs have this year found lineups that have worked without LeBron. They have found Dwayne Wade lineups, some Kevin Love, a lot of Jeff Green, that have been able to be positive with LeBron at the floor. That's a big win. I would imagine those things should get better once Isaiah is back and they get acclimated. And I think you have seen the Cavs form some kind of identity over the last few games. What do you think has been the reason the Cavs have found lineups? Like, well, who and why are the Cavs actually succeeding this year without LeBron on the floor? Why are they not cratering like we've seen last year? Even if you could argue, and I think rightfully point out, that Kyrie Irving is better than anyone the Cavs are running bench units with right now. Why has this been different this year?
I think that you have to look at the defense, actually. The offense without LeBron is still, I would call it cratering, I guess. I mean, the O rating without LeBron on the floor is 98.5. So you're not looking at a good offense right there. I mean, that would obviously be last in the league. But you're looking at a defense that has like a 97, 98 D rating when LeBron's on the bench. And when you watch the film, especially as Wade has kind of acclimated to his role, I've been extremely impressed with both Wade and Kyle Korver on the defensive end. And I know that these guys are older guys. They're not the most athletic guys. You're not going to see a ton of wow plays out of them on defense. But you can really tell that they're two guys who come from a lineage of defensive systems that have been successful and sound. And so what you see a lot of times when LeBron's on the bench and these two guys are, you know, guarding some of these cutting or pick-and-roll guards, is that they're just always in the right place. And they might not always make the play. They might get beaten in isolation every once in a while because they might be a step slower than they used to be. But you can see that Kyle Korver and Dwayne Wade know where to be on the defensive end, and they're going to get themselves there more often than not. And a lot of times, especially against second units, just being in the correct position is going to be such a benefit to your defense. And these are two guys who I think have really settled into playing quite well off the ball on the defensive end.
I think the Pistons game was a really good example of this, because the Pistons are a team that I think if they would have played the Cavs a week ago, you would have seen a team that plays really well off dribble handoffs, that moves pretty well, that does kind of just small things well, and the Cavs handled it. Jay Crowder was someone that I think that got from point A to point B well on those dribble handoffs. JR was kind of, I wrote about this and talked about this in the pod yesterday, but JR was maybe the bad one And that was really only in the first quarter. Korver puts an effort on defense. Wade, I think, has put in a lot better effort on defense of late for the most part, even though there's still some things in moments where he slid. Jeff Green's been legitimately a good defensive player for this Cavs team, and I don't think that the importance of that can be overstated. So as we look at this, what are lineups in your mind, especially when, let's just say, in a perfect world, you know, Derrick Rose just becomes a non-factor for this team. You get Isaiah back. Let's just operate under that assumption. It may not be exactly accurate, but if you're optimizing the Cavs, I think that's what you end up getting. What are some pairings you would like to see 2-3 months from now when the team actually is fully healthy and we get to see the kind of the building of the foundation of what they're going to try to use to make a run in the playoffs and try to be better than they were last year and at least have a different, at least the same level chance of pulling the upset in a finals matchup with Golden State?
I think that, I mean, obviously you're going to start with LeBron and Isaiah. You know, Isaiah might not give you exactly what you're looking for on the defensive end. He's certainly not one of the best defenders in the league at the point guard position. Some argue that he's one of the worst. But the offensive benefits that he's going to give you are just going to be too much to leave on the bench. So I think you start with those two guys. The way that the Cavs have played, it's hard to envision, at least in my mind, playing a too big setup against the Warriors. Just the way that it, you know, worked out in last year's finals was basically every time the Cavs had two bigs on the floor, they were getting destroyed. You've seen what Kevin Love can do. Teams have put him in the pick and roll a ton this year, and it hasn't worked out that well. It's going to be a question of whether or not he can kind of stay on the floor for those matchups or whether you need to go to Tristan Thompson with four other shooters on the floor. I think both are available. And the Warriors don't run as much pick and roll as other teams, so it's possible that Love can survive out there. And then you really have a lot of wings to choose from. I mean, you're obviously going to, you know, hope that Jay Crowder can shoot the ball a little better. And if he's shooting the ball a little better, he's a great matchup for you on the defensive end. If you want to go more offense, you can look to Kyle Korver. You can look to a J.R. Smith too. Another guy who I think, as you just mentioned, has been a little lackluster on the defensive end so far this year. You're obviously hoping for more from him, especially as a one-on-one defender. There have been some times where he's just kind of gotten beat by guys that you wouldn't really expect him to, just on straight line drives. And that's something that definitely you'd like to correct. And then, you see a guy like Jeff Green, and Jeff Green, he's definitely been much better than I anticipated coming into this season, much better than he's been in the last few years. I think the other day he mentioned that there's joy back in the game. And although he's not going to give you the same shooting prowess as some of these other guys, he is a good option, in my opinion, at least how he's played so far in terms of switchability on the defensive end. And more than anything, switchability on the defensive end is key against Golden State. And if you're unable to play a guy like Love or even like Tristan against that death lineup, you could potentially go to a five-man unit that has either LeBron or Jeff Green at center and then surround them with three other guards and try to see how that alignment works out.
Yeah, I'll just throw out two that kind of involve archetypes of what I like to see. I think LeBron, Korver, Isaiah as a trio is something I'm very intrigued by. I think you have to play Crowder there, and I think you either have to just embrace the smallness and put JR in that lineup, put Jeff Green in that lineup, or you need to play Tristan Thompson at the five there. I think that's kind of something as a LeBron plus bench unit with one or two other starters, depending on how you would classify, or depending on how, you know, what if Crowder, if it's Crowder, or if it's Green, or if it's Tristan, or Isaiah, like depending who's out there, I think that kind of lineup works. I'm still gonna ride for the idea that Wade and Love should be a duo. I think they could really work nicely together. I think Green makes sense in that lineup. I think JR makes sense in those lineups. I think Shumpert makes sense as a nominal point guard in those lineups. I think Isaiah could really make sense in those lineups too, although again, you get into these issues where the Cavs are going to have backcourt defensive issues, I think, when they're optimizing their offense, and I think that's a conversation we're going to be probably having as we get closer to playoffs, is if you look at some of the lineups the Cavs are going to maybe need to use to be at their best offensively, what does that mean against Washington? What does that mean against Boston? What does that mean against Toronto and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan? And, you know, that doesn't even get us talking about Klay and Steph Curry, but, I mean, I think, like, that is going to be an issue, at least at some point. Like, what do you do if your best lineup ends up being something with Korver and Isaiah Thomas with LeBron? you know, what, how do you hang if Toronto is going to have, you know, guys out there that are going to cause you problems, even if it's just one of Lowry and DeRozan, how do you handle, can you handle a CJ Miles? Can you handle a Norm Powell? Can they be good enough there where that they can handle some of the pressure those guys are going to put on them?
Yeah. And you mentioned, a Wade and Love duo. And I think that one thing that people have touched on in various places, and I think holds true, is that Wade and Korver as a duo have been excellent this year. They're playing nearly 17 minutes a game together. They have a 116.0 rating and a 99.5 D rating. And then, you look at those two guys and you add LeBron. So the three-man group, the old man group, I guess you would call it, of LeBron and Wade and Korver has been excellent with a 127.70 rating and a 100.3 defensive rating in 126 minutes. So like I mentioned before, I think that both of those guys have really stabilized the defense some, especially in the lineups with the second unit, just because they're in the right place at the right time. And so, you add LeBron to those two guys and you're not going to ask Wade to probably give you more than maybe 20-ish minutes in a playoff series, but I think that tethering him to Kyle Korver is extremely important for ensuring his success.
Before we move on here, reminding you that you should go to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Cavs, leave a 5-star rating and review, and you'll be supporting the pod in the best way you can. It is absolutely the best way to show support for this podcast because it helps other people find the show. So go to iTunes, leave that 5-star rating and review. It'll take you 5 minutes, and I cannot thank you enough for everyone out there that has already left one. A key part in all of this is, at least lately in this winning streak, has been Channing Frye. I know that you, have certainly advocated that he deserves more minutes. I 100% agree with you. I think his just floor spacing that you've already touched on is something that can't be replaced. There's going to be a point where Tristan Thompson comes back. There's going to be a point where this team does have fully healthy. Is there still a place when this team has all of its normal guys at full strength for a 6-minute Channing Frye appearance game to game? Or how do you use him when this team is actually healthy again in a month or so, if that's a relatively when we expect Tristan Thompson back?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, and you know me, I'm always going to advocate for Channing Frye minutes. The spacing that he provides on the offensive end, especially against backup centers who are usually not used to having to guard to the perimeter, I think is invaluable. Over this 5-game winning streak, he's playing 16 minutes a night. He's shooting 43% from three, and he's taking about three a game. So you look at him right in that 10 to 15 minute slot in terms of where he's going to be. And, against the Pistons, that was actually in that second quarter was the first time that he's played with Kevin Love all season. And so I think that if you're going to add Love to those bench units, which I think is a pretty reasonable thing to expect once Isaiah Thomas gets back, you can definitely play Love and Frye together. I think that you can create a lot of mismatches on the offensive end if you do that. And going against second unit guards, you're not going to be as scared of that dribble drive penetration, those pick and dive bigs. And so I think that that's kind of an iteration that you can get away with for, 5 minutes or, to between the first and the second quarter, and then maybe 5 minutes between the third and the fourth, something like that. So you end up with Frye maybe right around 12 minutes. But I think that, there has to be a spot for him in this rotation because of the offensive gravity that he provides and the ability that, he opens, especially when he plays with Kyle Korver, for guys like a Wade, who's really not able to get to the rim on a non-space floor. But when you see him playing next to both Frye and Korver, he's really, able to be in single coverage on those post-ups. He got a few against Ish Smith against the Pistons because, Frye and Korver are running some sort of pin-down action on the backside. You can't really help off. Those are the types of things that you might not see in the box score, but that Channing Frye is really making an opposing defense bend. And I think that he needs to continue getting minutes on this team.
With you on that, I think you need to find him just moments. I think he's battled on the boards, he's battled on defense. That is about all you can ask of him. This is something that I know you have very strong opinions on, and it's something that I think the one issue I have with Frye is that he's always going to be a disaster defending the pick and roll. He's just not athletic enough to kind of cover space the way the Cavs have asked him to. And Kevin Love's not either. So this is kind of a problem beyond Channing Frye. I don't know exactly what the repercussions would be for them doing this, but I almost wonder if they're better off having them drop back. And I know Lou likes to say that this engages guys when they hedge like that, it makes you work. And they were really good defensively against the Pistons, and we'll talk about that. But what do you see in the Cavs pick and roll defense that you think needs to be improved? Because I will say that this to me, this defense could get better one on one. They can run a line that should be fine enough one on one defending. They can work hard. They should get better rebounding, especially when Tristan gets back. I do not know how they solve pick and roll defense. I have no idea how this team can become passable against pick and roll defense, and that's going to matter at some point. I would think.
Yeah. So I was I was watching the film of the Pistons game tonight, and I was talking on Twitter about it with Dylan Murphy, who, if people don't know, he's a former D-League assistant coach for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. He was on Nate Duncan's podcast a few times.
I was going to say, he's just on Nate Duncan. He has the Dunked On podcast yesterday, and he's fantastic.
And he's writing for his own blog called The Basketball Dictionary, where he basically is explaining terminology that guys actually use, whether it's players or coaches. So if you don't follow him on Twitter, definitely give him a follow. But beyond that, so I was talking to him about this, and basically what I saw the first time that the Pistons ran a pick and roll, you see Kevin Love on Andre Drummond hard hedging, like Ty Lue likes to do. And what that basically does is force the Pistons to pass the ball to Andre Drummond. And the way that they ran that specific pick and roll with no action on the backside, Andre Drummond couldn't make a play off of it. He turns the ball over. So the next time that they run a pick and roll, they do the exact same thing up top, but on the backside, they just have a simple pin down. So Jay Crowder's guy goes and screens for J.R. Smith's guy. This kind of occupies the two guys who should be in weak side help. And again, they throw a pass to Drummond, and this time he has an open lane for a layup, because Crowder's late because he's worried about this pick and roll action on the backside. And so my thing is that when you watch the Cavs on film and you see that second play, you see that when Kevin Love is jumping out hard, all you have to do is do something token on the backside, and it's likely that your big is going to have enough runway to score. And so I just never been a fan of this hard hedging coverage. I think that when they have done the drop coverage this year, that Love isn't dropping to the height of the ball. I like to see it where when you're the drop guy, you're going to be basically at the heels of the screener. And so when the guy comes off of the pick and roll, you're going to be there to meet him, but you're basically going to drop and trail and lock on to the roller whenever he rolls. So you're going to allow your guy to get over the top, but at the same point in time, you're going to be following your man, who is the screener. And so what I've seen from Love when they've done the drop coverage is that he's basically been one to two steps below the screen. And so he's giving up both the jumper off of the mid-range, but also the pass, because he's not taking away that passing angle to the roll man. And so I think that the drop is a successful strategy and one that the Cavs should be employing. But I just don't think that Kevin Love is high enough when they do it. And I think that that's really a simple fix, and they don't need to go to this ridiculous hard hedging thing that they do, because in the end, I think that beats them, especially if the roll man isn't Andre Drummond, but he's Draymond Green or someone who, can make plays off of the bounce and off of the catch. And then you're really putting your defense in 4-on-3 situations, and you're likely to get beat.
Cavs fans will get mad at me for saying this, but like, that's something Al Horford's really good at.
Yeah, no, he's one of the best big man passers, and he has no problem putting the ball on the floor. So as soon as that pass is threaded into him, he's going to find somebody if you're not there to greet him. So it's either going to be a Horford layup, or they're going to generate an open look from three.
Al Horford has been the best player in the Celtics. Kyrie Irving has not been, and to me, it's not really been close. Al Horford's been really good to start the year for Boston. Last guy we'll talk about, Jay Crowder. I think his best game was the Detroit game. I maintain that he has been better since the second half of the Mavs game. What about the Detroit game for him stood out to you?
So as I've chronicled a few times, the opposing teams have essentially shifted for the most part against the Cavs starting lineup to basically having their more mobile power forwards, whether that's a guy like Tobias Harris, who's really playing up a position at a four, or whether it's a guy who's kind of a true power forward like a Thad Young. They're going to basically start out guarding Kevin Love. And then you're going to get a guy like an Andre Drummond, like a Miles Turner. They're going to be the guys who are actually guarding Jay Crowder. And I think that coaches are basically doing that for two reasons. The first being that Crowder's really not going to be involved in a lot of pick and roll actions. So his man can kind of, you know, help out on if it's going to be a Love pick and roll, he can kind of help off of Crowder. And I just don't think that opposing coaches really see him as a, you know, 38 plus threat from 3-point land. And if he's going to be shooting closer to 29% or even 33%, you're willing to have your center on him and kind of helping off and maybe giving a token contest. So one of the things I've seen from Crowder that I think has been extremely helpful to kind of combat this strategy is that he's just been a lot more active off the ball. He's moving a lot more. He's setting a lot more flare screens or pin downs when other people have the ball on the opposite side of the floor. And he's basically making these centers think. He's not allowing them to just kind of sit in the paint or sit in strong side help. And when he is getting the ball, he knows that these guys are going to be closing hard because they have a long distance to recover. And so he's utilizing that pump fake. You saw him against the Pistons. He got one in the corner where Drummond went up and he basically jumped into him and drew the foul. He got another one where he pump faked from using the left slot. And he basically was able to get right to the rim and score on a layup. And so I think that he's just done a better job of kind of seeing how other teams are guarding him and using that against them rather than kind of buying into what opposing coaches are looking for him to do.
100% agreed on that. I will add this on his defense. I think I have two things on this. One, I think the expectation for him from some people may have been a tad high. I think he's good on defense. I think he's a solid defender. He's not your Kawhi, right? Like, he is not your Draymond. He is not your pick your other lockdown defender. There's like five really, really good ones. Crowder is more in the PJ Tucker category, right? Like, he's gonna get blown by sometimes. Like, that is just gonna happen. He's the thing I think he's done better, especially against the Pistons, is that he's really, really worked to be in the right position more so than he was. Maybe that's the joy, maybe it's the comfort. You know, you had LeBron in this game also be like, they're leaving you open, Jay, or something along those lines. LeBron kind of egging him on. There seems to be that kind of boost there. I think he's just playing harder, and I think like he just looks like a more confident player, and I think that's a really big deal. I think when you have him getting to the spots and denying penetration on dribble handoffs, on pick and rolls, like, that just at least gives you someone that's not going to get picked on. Because if you have him and JR, and then LeBron, and you know, maybe Isaiah can be workable, and Love can continue to work. Like, Love has at least worked hard and has rebounded well in most games of late. Like, you can, I think it at least better. The Cavs are last in defense right now, and I think they've been better. Like, they're not significantly better. They're still, like, LeBron's not playing hard and all these different things, but, like, I think there is at least some improvement, and I think some of that is just tied to effort.
Yeah, I think that what you see essentially when you have Jay Crowder on the opposing team's biggest threat basically at the wing. So in the Pistons game, he's guarding Tobias Harris, and you see LeBron guarding Stanley Johnson. And the Pistons game was an example of how that setup works really well for the Cavs, because LeBron was engaged from the jump. And so you see LeBron in that free safety role, tagging cutters, being over there for role guys, and, you know, obviously playing against Stanley Johnson, a guy who isn't the greatest shooter from downtown, allows LeBron more freedom. But when he's locked in and you put him in that free safety role, he's going to be great in that role. And Crowder is going to be a guy who's able to slow down perimeter scorers enough that if he does get beat, he can kind of trust a guy like LeBron behind him. The problems have arisen, in my opinion, when LeBron has been not engaged. So, you know, he's kind of roaming off of his guy, but it's not really successful, whether he's not there to help or whether his guy's just kind of wandering around and getting spot up looks. And so I think that you see in the Pistons game, basically what Ty Lue wants out of that iteration. He wants the defense to be active and rotating. And basically they shut down the Pistons, who have been extremely successful on offense this year. And especially in those handoffs, they've done an incredibly good job scoring, especially Avery Bradley. They really struggled in that iteration. Drummond's been, you know, 5-6 assists a game in a lot of these games. He was only at 3. He had a bunch of turnovers. LeBron took a charge on one of his drives. And that's the kind of active defense that I think the Cavs can play. Obviously, they're not playing it every game. Over this 5-game streak, they do have an 108 defensive rating, 100.8, which is near the top of the league. Opponents are only shooting 31% from 3 against them. They were shooting, you know, 43-44 at the beginning of the year when the defense was really horrible. And so, obviously, that number is going to continue to regress. I would say it's down to like 39.8% right now. It'll probably settle somewhere around 36-37. And you see a team that when they are engaged, you're starting to visualize the makings of a defense that could be successful. It's just a matter of, you know, how often they're going to bring it and what that ceiling is.
Lots of figure out lineups as well. Good point about the defensive rating is what I was going to bring up next as well. It's over that stretch, it's the 9th best in the NBA. It is better than teams like Toronto, better than teams like the Bucks, better than teams like the Wolves, who had a really, really good defensive league last week before the last couple games has been shaky. It's only slightly worse than the Thunder, who, despite other issues, have a good defensive team. It's not much worse than what the Warriors have been either. And I think Derrick Rose just not being there helps. Jose Calderon, for all the guff that we can give him and the hilarity that it is that the Cavs did sign him on the first day of free agency, he at least worked to get to the right spots and communicated and know what he was supposed to be doing on defense against the Pistons.
Can we talk about the fact that he essentially, like, turned his back to the basket and just was, like, old man game clowning Reggie Jackson for, like, 2 straight possessions?
It's weird. So weird, right? Like, just so weird that,
so
like, we're
funny.
Yeah, and, like, this is after he was abysmal in his other minutes, like, in real NBA minutes, and then you just had him outplay Reggie Jackson. It's crazy.
Like, he was essentially just out on the wing, like, with his back turned to the basket, and then he basically used it as, like, a deception tactic so he could cut back door, and he was, like, wide open. It was just like, where did this come from? How is this guy doing this?
He's really smart. Like, I think for all of Jose Calderon's limitations and his flaws, like, he's a very, very smart KG basketball player who kind of knows what he is. And I think it's not the conversation we need to have, but I think that's something the Cavs at least can make more use of other skill sets of guys who are trying to do more than that. Cavs play the Nets on Wednesday, Mike. The Nets are kind of... They're kind of struggling right now, just not necessarily in terms of how they've played. They played the Warriors hard not too long ago, but they don't have D'Angelo Russell. They don't have Jeremy Lin. They move pretty well. They play that Kenny Atkinson derivative 61 Hawks system. What would you like to see from the Cavs in a game that frankly could be a game where the Cavs you wouldn't be shocking if they came out and played with not a lot of effort.
Obviously, this is a game that, at least as fans, I feel like we think it to be a must win.
Gotta boost those odds.
Especially after losing the first one with the Brooklyn pick in hand, you have to think that the Cavs need to win this game to keep pushing that pick down. But just in terms of on the floor, I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has been pretty effective as an off-ball cutter this year. He's getting to the line a ton, and that's something that will hurt the Cavs if they don't come out with energy. Brooklyn really doesn't have any front court depth or on the front line, and so it could be another big Kevin Love game. I think he had 15 and 12 against them the first time around, and I would look for, you know, some centers have had huge performances against them this year. I'd look for him to get at least 20 in this game. I think that he could really show out against Brooklyn's front line. And again, I mean, this isn't a game that they should lose. It's obviously a game that they could lose given, you know, how they've played against some bad teams this year. But, you know, you're looking at a 5-game win streak. Your next 2 games are against Brooklyn and then at home against Charlotte, a team that LeBron has historically dominated. And you could really run this thing out to 7 games with a young upstart Philadelphia 76ers squad on the schedule for that Monday after the Thanksgiving break in Philadelphia, which could really be an interesting game to watch. So I feel like the Cavs could and should be locked in for the next 2 games to really run this streak out to 7 and then have quite the interesting matchup with Philadelphia.
Yeah, I can't wait for Joel Embiid LeBron.
I'll be there in the building.
Oh, I'm jealous of that. I'm very looking forward to the Sixers being, they come to town in December on a Saturday. And I for my day job, I have a I already know that I have a trip where I have to come. I leave on a Thursday, and I'm basically coming back Friday night late just so I can get to that Sixers game and cover that Sixers game on Saturday, because I'm like, I have to see, I hopefully get to see Embiid and Simmons play, because I just, right. maybe Fultz at that point too, depending on how his shoulder kind of shakes itself out. It's not too long from now, so maybe he seems less likely to play by then. But Cavs right now, if the they're in an okay spot with that Nets pick, Nets have the sixth best odds per tankathon of getting the number one pick, 6.3% right now behind the Clippers, Kings, Bulls, Hawks, and Mavericks. They certainly could get worse. You would think the Clippers would get better, and then you just kind of have to hope the Nets end up being worse than those other teams, even though all those other teams are highly, highly incompetent basketball teams, especially the Chicago Bulls and especially the Dallas Mavericks, because only Dennis Smith is any good in that group. My two things for the Nets game, I would say Kevin Love, I agree with you. I wrote about how he bullied the Pistons. I think the Nets' roster is very much the same, where he should be able to kind of have his way inside, especially if they just kind of give him post touches. They try to do different things to get him going, to get him established on his more preferred left block and just kind of let him work. And I do want to see how the Cavs just kind of defend what the Nets do. They do move the ball well. Ron Harris Jefferson, as you mentioned, is a good cutter. LeVert's a good, moves well off ball, has a little bit of a handle. Spencer Dinwiddie's been okay. He's like not like an, he's not nothing in a vacuum. Are the Cavs going to be focused enough to defend that group, and can they just kind of end this early? This could be another game where this game's over by the end of the third quarter, and they go into Thanksgiving on a really good win and on a pretty easy win.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say to everyone listening, if you get a chance to really hone in on something on the Nets, watch how Spencer Dinwiddie runs the pick and roll, especially for a guy who doesn't have peak athleticism. I think that he's one of the best pick and roll guys in the NBA in that tier down athleticism. He does a really good job of snaking the pick and roll, basically, you know, going over the pick and roll. If he's going to his right, immediately crossing back left to get the defender on his back. He's extremely crafty out of the action, and I just think that it's a joy to watch him run pick and roll. So if you want to focus on one thing for the Nets, they run a ton of pick and roll, and Dinwiddie is really excellent at doing it.
That should be a very interesting game. Last game before Thanksgiving. Last game for the Cavs before the schedule gets a couple more interesting games coming up with the Heat, the Hornets, and the 76ers coming up soon. But this has been Locked On Cavs. Mike Zevigano has been the guest. You can find him on Twitter at mzevigano11. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the pod, as always.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
Again, check out Draft. Go play Draft today. Play free fantasy basketball using that promo code LOCAVS. And we'll talk to you tomorrow after the Nets game. And we'll be off until Saturday. We're going to take – you'll have an episode on Thanksgiving because you're all, like me, probably basketball sickos and need to do something in the morning. We'll be off Friday. Go spend money. It's National Capitalism Day. And we'll be back on Saturday with a recap of Cavs Hornets and back to normal next week. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll talk tomorrow. And – enjoy Cavs Nets.